I found it amazing how kind of inadvertently NASA became this loneliness laboratory in the middle of what then became, you know, a loneliness pandemic. It was just a crazy sort of accident.
Hi, this is Universe of Art, a podcast from Science Friday and WNYC Studios about artists who use science to take their work to the next level. I'm Dee Peterschmidt. NASA's getting ready to send humans to Mars, and although the launch date has been pushed back throughout the years, the agency says it wants to get there in the 2030s. And it has a lot on its to-do list. NASA needs to build new rockets, new living spaces, spacesuits, radiation shielding. But one of the biggest challenges is not the engineering, but the mental health of the astronauts. Can all the crew members get along with each other and stay alive over the course of 3 years in tight quarters and unforgiving environments? How will they cope with being separated from their families and friends for so long? And what lessons can they learn from astronauts who have spent months on the International Space Station? And from our own experience of isolation during the pandemic? There's a new documentary about all this, out now. It's called The Longest Goodbye. And it dives into NASA's Human Factors Program, a group of psychologists who are trying to figure out the best way to preserve astronauts' mental health on a long and demanding mission away from their loved ones.
It was a really cold morning. I remember they're counting down. And then as soon as it lifts off, you can feel it in your chest. My mom is not on the planet. She's really gone.
We all start wondering if we're doing the right thing. Should I have been on this mission? Should I have left my family back there? And that can lead to devastating psychological effects.
I talked to the film's director, Ido Mizrahi, and one of its featured astronauts, Katie Coleman, who's lived on the space station, about the challenges that The Longest Goodbye presents. Plus, after that, stay tuned for a conversation I had with a musician in Akron, Ohio, who got a group of percussionists together to perform a drum roll for the recent solar eclipse. But first, here's The Longest Goodbye's director, Ido Mizrahi, and what captivated him most about NASA's crewed Mars mission was not the engineering challenges, but how the astronauts would cope with being separated from the rest of humanity.
I found it amazing how kind of inadvertently NASA became this loneliness laboratory in the middle of what then became, you know, a loneliness pandemic. It was just a crazy sort of accident.
When NASA's embarked on ambitious missions in the past, they've had to develop a lot of new tech to make them happen. Those discoveries are then passed down to the public, and we can thank NASA for the Velcro in our clothing, the tiny cameras in our phones, and the technology that makes CAT scans possible. And now, as the Surgeon General has stated that we're in a loneliness epidemic, maybe the public can get new insight on isolation from the space agency's research.
Here's a team that's trying to solve isolation in space, but wait a minute, it's actually for all of us.
And trying to figure out the best way to build a team of astronauts who can complete and survive a grueling 3-year mission is no small feat, especially where real-time communication won't be an option as the crew gets farther and farther away from Earth.
Every protocol possible needs to be automated and figured out. So many things have to be simulated. And the kind of autonomous mission that it becomes, where these 4 or 6 people need to cover so many different expertise. Right? So, like, who do you send also? Do you send someone who's a doctor and a geologist? Because you want to get all that science done, but you also need to have these expertise that allow them to take care of themselves. So how many professions can 4 people contain, basically? And then also find the 4 or 6 people who make for the right team, you know? So how do you test that? And how can you simulate that in advance is what's on Dr. Holland's mind.
Here's Dr. Al Holland, an applied psychologist at NASA's Human Factors Division, in a clip from the movie.
You look for the things that make a difference in a much, much longer mission. A team player, good communicator, has good judgment, has a history of living successfully in small groups, particularly under extreme conditions. Because when we ask them to spend 3 years on a mission to a planet that's a long way out on that tether, we'll see a gradual degradation of the environment.
That makes for a really fascinating challenge that's new, and they're never going to be able to totally predict what's going to happen.
Someone who has some idea of how this could play out is Katie Coleman, a former NASA astronaut and Air Force colonel.
In our work, in our travels, in our training, we spend so much time away from our families, and my phrase is practicing bleeding.
Meaning she knows a journey like this is going to hurt. So how does she prepare? Katie's completed 2 space shuttle missions and a 6-month stay on the International Space Station. All told, more than 180 days in space. She also has a husband and a son, and that son was in the 4th grade when she went up to live on the space station in 2010. NASA set up video conference systems between the astronauts and their families so they could keep in touch. Here's a clip of Katie playing tic-tac-toe with her son while she's in space.
If you loved me more, you'd let me win. You know, I'm in space and lonely. If you loved me, you'd let me win tic-tac-toe.
Okay, hold on. I'll go first this time.
But I miss you guys a ton. And, I don't know, sort of, it's hard on not knowing it's only Sunday there and it's all cozy and maybe you guys even have a fire in the fireplace and it's hard not to be there.
And when her son acted out at school, partially because his mom was away, she couldn't be there to help out. Katie hadn't seen those video calls until the movie's premiere at Sundance.
For me, it's hard to see in black and white, you know, the mom that could not be there maybe could have smoothed things out a little bit more if she was. It's hard.
Here's Dr. Holland again.
This is an environment in which things are moving very rapidly. And so we have to maximize the connectivity during that physical separation because crew members' connection with the family is a critical piece of sustenance for them. A mission to Mars will amplify that because the sense of distance, the sense of separation is much more powerful.
So it's a very hard problem, and they're going about it in very creative ways, I think.
NASA's been working with outside behavioral experts to figure out new ways to deal with long-term isolation. They're currently experimenting with virtual reality to immerse astronauts in calming nature environments or so they can interact with an avatar of their spouse. They're also working with IBM on a robotic AI companion called Simon, a foot-wide sphere with a screen that displays a simple face that can change expressions. It gets around the space station by blowing out puffs of air. And Simon serves double duty, acting as an information resource and as a companion that astronauts can confide in for psychological help. And something I was surprised by was how reticent some astronauts are about sharing an accurate picture of their mental health with their psychologist while in space. Psychologists have been doing this with astronauts for a while on the space station, but when you're traveling to Mars, where real-time communication is impossible, how could an AI companion change that? Here's a clip from the film with astronaut Matthias Maurer talking about his experience with Simon on the space station.
But can I trust Simon? If I plug in cables and Simon says like, Matthias, the last cable wasn't correct. And that's already the 3rd cable that you put in the wrong place today. And Simon might say like, Matthias, I think you're too tired today. You're not 100% fit. So Simon can provide a protocol to the psychologist and they could look at these values and say like, maybe Matthias isn't the perfect candidate for the next mission. I don't want them to find anything wrong with me, something that could disqualify me. So you keep a lot of information towards yourself. I hope that Simon will not exclude me from the next mission.
Now, at this point, you might be thinking, we've been doing pretty well, making plenty of discoveries by sending rovers and satellites to other planets and moons. Why not just keep doing that and save everyone the heartache and danger? Astronaut Katie Coleman says there are solid scientific reasons to send humans. They can cover more ground, get more samples, do more tests. But that's not the only reason she'd want to go. Here's Katie.
You want so much to be there. You want to go back. I mean, it's the thing about space. It's quite addictive, right?
Here's director Ito Mizrahi again.
I think we're still kind of all recovering, both from being terrified of not being able to see my loved ones, and then suddenly toward the end of the pandemic, being terrified of leaving my home and reconnecting and suddenly feeling a great sense of comfort in being isolated, which was also a very terrifying idea. So if this story kind of provides a way to act out some of those things in another prism, right, that kind of gives just enough distance where you're not, it's not as close to the bone, it's, you know, it's happening to astronauts and allows that kind of disguise to help you kind of deal with stuff.
We as humans from the planet Earth are leaving our planet and living in space and learning about how to go further and that the moon is next. And it's not something that's going to happen like someday. It's happening really now.
The Longest Goodbye is now available to rent or buy online. And you can check out a trailer for it on our website, sciencefriday.com/longestgoodbye. And before we go, I don't know about you, but I'm still thinking about the solar eclipse from last Monday. Well, a Universe of Art listener named Matt Kurtz from Akron, Ohio, which was in the path of totality, found a special musical way to celebrate it. He wrote to us about it, and I caught up with him last week about what happened.
My name is Matt Kurtz, and I am a performance sound artist, but I also make music. As an undergrad, I had this concept that I came up with of doing drum rolls for everyday activity as a way to kind of pay attention. At that time, it was more humor-oriented stuff. I would like do a drum roll for people coming out of an elevator. It's been this kind of ubiquitous way to build suspense throughout culture. And when you hear a drum doing that, it forces you to be like, something's about to happen. Through serendipity, basically, Akron was, you know, in the center of the path of totality for the total eclipse. And it felt like a perfect continuation to do a drum roll before the total eclipse reaches totality. And so it felt appropriate to get a small percussion section.
Matt reached out to Akron Soul Train, a local artist residency, for some funding, and hired out a 7-piece percussion section made up mostly of his friends, which included 4 snare drums, some hand cymbals, 2 timpanis.
There was a gong that I rented, which I want to rent like every day of my life now. We found out the time that the total eclipse would reach totality at an outdoor stone amphitheater called Chestnut Ridge Park. We went up about 5 minutes before that and began a slow drum roll that built up and stopped right at the moment of totality. And then I had kind of a couple minutes of peace where I just got to like look at the stars and kind of feel where all this work went to.
Thanks to listener Matt Kurtz for that special message. Universe of Art is hosted and produced by me, D. Peterschmidt, and I also wrote the music. Our show art is illustrated by Abel Hayford. And support for Science Friday's science and arts coverage comes from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation. We'll be back in 2 weeks. See ya!